it's the Tully Rinky Legal Power Hour on 810 WGY.
You're listening to the Tully Rinky Legal Power Hour. I'm Barbara King, here tonight substituting for Matt. And our show is here each Sunday in our new time slot at 7 p.m. to give our listeners insight into the legal and political issues happening locally and across the country. So in addition to listening on your radio, we're broadcasting around the world on WGY.com. Visit our show's website at TullyRinkyShow.com for podcasts of our previous shows. Well, this week we're going to be looking at the services of a statewide legal services organization called the Empire Justice Center. And I'm joined by the center's president and CEO, Ann Erickson. And she's going to discuss the center and specifically the organization's current objectives, which are to assist homeowners facing foreclosures resulting from what we've all heard about, the subprime mortgage crisis. We'll also be looking at the Empire Justice Center and what it does statewide, how the mortgage crisis got to the point it did, and the options available for those it is affecting. Also with us tonight is our own Chris. He's back to add his thoughts. Hi,
hey, Barb.
Chris.
How are you?
Good. Anne, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
If you have any questions for us throughout the show, give us a call at 1-800-TALK-WGY or just press star WGY on your cell phone. So sit back, turn up the volume, make yourself some tea, get comfortable, and we're going to start talking right away about the Empire Justice Center. Anne, can you tell our listeners what the Empire Justice Center is and the purpose or mission of the organization?
Well, the Empire Justice Center has been around in different forms since about 1973. We are a statewide organization, and basically what we do is we try to make the law work for those who need it most. And we do this in three ways. We provide training, technical assistance, and backup to the local legal service programs around the state, primarily those outside of New York City, so Long Island and the rest of the state. We engage in legislative and administrative advocacy to try to improve the law for those that need it. And then we are a law firm, so we also provide representation and litigation services.
So it's training other legal organizations, delivering actual direct legal services to clients, and what we call lobbying.
Exactly.
Good. We'll break each of those down tonight. Now, what is your role as the president and CEO of the organization?
Well, basically, my role is to keep everything moving. We have offices in Rochester, Albany, White Plains, and on Long Island. It's about close to 50 people at this point, staff. So my job is really to keep things moving, keep things on track, keep things funded, keep programs working effectively, and making sure that we're looking at emerging trends in the legal field and staying ahead of the curve as best we can.
How does this organization come about? Did you found it, or was it just it was founded and then you came in and you became the president and CEO?
It was founded in 1973, and at that point it was part of the federal legal services delivery system. For those who don't understand what civil legal services are, on the criminal side, if you're arrested, you have a right to an attorney if you can't afford one. On the civil side, if you're about to lose your home, if you're being evicted, if your unemployment has been denied, if your child care has been denied, if you've lost your health benefits, you may have a right to challenge those denials and to challenge that process, but you don't have a right to an attorney to help you do that. So on the civil side, a lot of people are really left on their own. In this country, we are barely meeting 20% of the legal needs of the poor. And so what we have is this federal legal services system that is funded across the country. And back in the early days, part of that used to be to fund support centers as kind of the glue that helps hold things together. And there were support centers all over the country. In 1996, when Gingrich came to town to Washington, they eliminated all the funding for support centers. So we have been funded by state, by other federal grants, by grants and contracts. And we've been around for a while.
Do you guys get donations from the public?
Yeah, I was going to ask, is there any private funding? Like we had Lisa Frisch from the Legal Project on. They get government grants, but also private funding. Mm-hmm. Do you get any of that?
We get some private donations, and actually we're trying to step that up a bit because we have not gone into that sector as much as some of the other programs have. So we're really starting to launch that as we speak.
Are you an attorney, or how many attorneys do you work for the I'm not supposed to say EJC,
Empire Justice.
Empire Justice.
The Empire Justice Center. I am not an attorney. I came to Empire Justice. At that point, it was called the Greater Upstate Law Project. Actually, it'd be 20 years ago this year. And I came on board as what they called the legislative coordinator. My background is in media and political science, so journalism and poli-sci. And my job really was to translate between what the legislature was doing and what our attorneys were seeing as needed to be done, and kind of bridging that gap between what we were seeing happening to people on the front lines in a whole host of poverty law, low-income issues, and then bringing that to the legislature, hopefully for resolution.
So specifically, Anne, this idea of, as you called it, poverty law and civil legal services is geared primarily to people in a lower economic level who may intersect with more government agencies than other people, such as people in need of disability, perhaps state-funded health insurance, as you said, state or county-provided child care, things of that nature. So is that basically how you defined what the organization was going to do by what the needs were?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a combination. I mean, if you think about it, you know, as I was saying, for myself, the only time I ever needed an attorney was when I was closing on my house. But if you think about people that are living in poverty or very much on the economic fringe, their lives intersect with very complicated legal systems all the time. You need food stamps. Okay, so there are certain rights and responsibilities that come along with that. There are certain processes that you have to go through. There are certain ways that you can challenge a denial. Likewise on Child Health Plus or Family Health Plus or Medicaid or Medicare or in domestic violence arenas, the civil rights arenas, special ed. Your kids need special education services and the school's not giving them to you. You have a way to challenge that, but these are very complicated legal systems. And so what we try to do is with the local delivery system, we have legal services programs all over the country and in New York, all over the state. Every county has some access to legal assistance. They're there on the front line to try to help meet those needs.
Because, quite frankly, hiring a lawyer, perhaps to handle a special education need, could be a bit costly.
Absolutely.
What about immigration? I think you said you had started some programs involving immigration issues.
Mm-hmm. We have for the Empire Justice Center, our direct service delivery varies depending on where in the state we are. So our Rochester office, we're one of the core providers, so we do a lot of one-on-one legal assistance in the Rochester office. Here in Albany, it's really the Legal Aid Society of Northeastern New York is your core legal services provider doing a lot of the one-on-one. And what we have is some specialized projects that we do. So, for instance, we have a project where we will provide legal assistance to immigrant victims of domestic violence. They have certain special rights and protections that they can exercise within the immigration arena. So we work with Equinox and Unity House and the Y in Schenectady. They'll refer clients to us, and then we provide the legal assistance to them. And then our White Plains office is a two-person pure immigration practice.
We had some time back Seth Leach, who's an immigration attorney in Albany, on talking about immigration issues. And it does intersect with this domestic violence issue, because I think some people going through divorces, if they're an immigrant married to someone who is a citizen, whether or not they get divorced on domestic violence grounds, I believe does affect potentially their ability to stay in the country. Do you mm-hmm. deliver any actual divorce services to people?
I don't know if we've actually had divorce procedures, but there are certain protections that are available under the Violence Against Women Act, the VAWA Act, and how that intersects with immigration law. And there are certain ways where an immigrant victim of domestic violence can self-petition. So she, and primarily it's usually a female, but she may not have her own documentation to be in the country because she's here with an American spouse. And that becomes part of the abuse and part of the power control to threaten her that, you know, I won't give you your papers, you'll be deported. But there are legal protections where that woman can self-petition for her own status to be in the country. And we do a lot of that adjustment of status work.
So if I'm having a problem and I would like your assistance, if I give you a call, are you going to send an attorney out to maybe I have a court appearance? Are you going to come and help me out in a civil suit? Just going to send somebody over there?
You know, it will vary across the state, depending on how the different programs have their intake systems. I would suggest your first bet would be to go to the website or go to the library and look up a web area called Law Help.
Yeah, tell us about that lawhelp.org. It was very interesting. Describe for our listeners Law Help, LAWHELP.org. If they type that in, what are they going to find?
They will come to a website, and within that you can go to the New York section. And let's say you're having a housing problem. You will click on the housing area, and then you will type in your zip code, depending on where in the state you are. And then that will bring up for you all of the referrals for the legal services programs in your area that can provide help in housing. But more than that, it will also tell you, and this gets to your question, Chris, it will tell you what are their intake hours, when can you call them, what's the procedure for contacting them, what languages they speak, whether or not they can provide a full range of service or if they can only provide advice and brief service. And again, remember, we're barely meeting 20% of the legal needs of the poor. The system is overwhelmed, overburdened. We are turning away 2, 3, and 4 people for every person that we can serve. So it's a crap, I shouldn't say that, but it's tough getting in. And it is, you know, we do a lot of triage. So you may have a housing issue or an issue with your landlord. Our first question is, are you about to be evicted? Because we can only take the toughest cases.
Are your attorneys pro bono attorneys? Like they work for their firms and they do help, they help out on the side? Or you have a set core of attorneys that only do this work?
Primarily when we're talking about legal aid and legal services, we're talking about what they call a staff model. So these are staff attorneys. This is their job. This is what they do. Again, it varies around the state in terms of how big the programs are, but primarily you'll have attorneys and paralegals and administrative staff, but it's a full-blown organization, and that's what they exist to do.
Okay, well, we'd like to hear from you tonight. If you have any questions, give us a call at 1-800-TALK-WGY or *WGY on your cell phones. And if you have any questions but can't join us tonight, don't forget that we can be reached all week at the Tully Rinke offices. Our number is 218-7100. And when we're back, we'll be talking about the mortgage crisis and the rate of foreclosures in New York State. We're going to be talking about terms you've heard like subprime mortgages and all those scary things that I didn't quite understand until I sat down with Ann. So stay tuned.
One of the worst experiences you can go through is to be charged with a DWI. But with the experienced attorneys from Tully Rinke on your side, you can be confident that your lawyer will fiercely fight to protect your rights and get you the best possible outcome. Call Tully Rinke, 518-218-7100, or visit TullyLegal.com. Tully Rinke, PLLC, 441 New Carner Road, Albany, New York. And the Tully Rinke Legal Power Hour, Sunday nights at 7 on WGY. Prior results do not guarantee a similar outcome.
You've worked hard to acquire your wealth. Let us help you keep it. Hi, I'm Abigail Doolittle, Portfolio Manager at Johnson Illington Advisors. Johnson Illington is a money management firm that provides very conservative and disciplined portfolio management services. Our main goal at Johnson Illington is to preserve and enhance your wealth. We have a highly experienced team led by nationally known investment veteran and economist Hugh Johnson. Visit our website at johnson-illington.com. Johnson Illington Advisors on Broadway in Albany.
All right, Integral One Network Solutions. Tell me what they do again.
Well, they worked with us to design our new computer network. That's really made a difference. Helps us run our business better. They monitor everything 24/7 to keep it running smoothly. And they manage it all, so I don't have to hire an IT guy.
So when I hire Integral One, they manage my network so I can manage my business. Talk about peace of mind.
Integral One Network Solutions. Online at integral1.net. That's integral1.net. 464-4014.
A traffic ticket is not a simple matter, and simply paying a traffic ticket might not be your best option. Just because you were issued a ticket doesn't mean you're guilty. The experienced attorneys at Tully Rinke have handled thousands of traffic and speeding tickets in New York. Call Tully Rinke, 518-218-7100, or visit TullyLegal.com. Tully Rinke, PLLC, 441 New Carner Road, Albany, New York. And the Tully Rinke Legal Power Hour, Sunday nights at 7 on WGY. Prior results do not guarantee a similar outcome.
Welcome back to the Tully Rinke Legal Power Hour. I'm Barbara King, one of Tully Rinke's family and matrimonial law attorneys. Joining me tonight is the president and CEO of the Empire Justice Center, Ann Erickson. And tonight we're talking about the center and some of the more prominent legal issues facing New Yorkers today. Also joining us is Chris. If you have any questions about how these laws affect you or questions about the Empire Justice Center, give us a call at 1-800-TALK-WGY. Also, feel free to check us out online anytime at TullyLegal.com. Okay, Ann, when we went into the break, we had been talking about the lawhelp.org website, which is really terrific. I would direct anybody with legal needs to take a look at that. But I wanted to get started into the legal services arm of your program. Chris was asking, you know, are you going to send a lawyer out to help me if I have a problem? I want to talk about the direction of direct legal services and specifically your foreclosure prevention work done at the Empire Justice Center. What programs are out there now for people facing loss of their homes?
Well, you know, New York last year, let's just step back a minute. I mean, we, in our Rochester office, as I said, we do a lot of direct services. And we started to see, we do a lot of consumer law, and we started to see these very strange mortgages coming out in the late 90s, early 2000. And
so you're talking almost 10 years ago, you saw a trend starting.
Yeah. It grew slowly, then exploded, and obviously now is crashing. But we were really seeing brokers come into low-income neighborhoods and start selling to people that really couldn't afford the mortgage from day one.
Now, when you say brokers, are you talking about the real estate broker, the realtor who sells the house, or are you talking about a mortgage broker?
A mortgage broker.
Someone who's selling the lending.
Selling the lending, exactly.
How were they doing this? They were knocking on doors or just showing up in neighborhoods at, like, I don't know, parties?
Yes, yes, and yes. Knocking on doors, putting up flyers, working through churches, very sadly, and really kind of selling the American dream. And it was tough because we also have in this country what's called the Community Reinvestment Act, and that was requiring banks to do greater investing in low-income neighborhoods. So on the one hand, we were working very hard to try to get people into homes that they could afford so that for the first time for many of these families, it was the first time anyone in their family had ever owned a home. But you do it in a way that's very structured. You're working with the bank. You're making sure that the buyer can afford the mortgage that they're getting into. You're getting them into very solid mortgages, and you're helping stabilize neighborhoods and communities. Then what we started to see was these mortgage brokers coming in and selling to people that they had no business selling to, that really couldn't afford the products that they were getting them into. They were unaffordable from day one.
Let me interrupt you there.
Sure.
So somebody's looking to buy a house. You know, maybe it's in a modest neighborhood, $110,000 home. And they earn $28,000 a year. They go to a major bank who might say, we can't lend you $120,000 because you don't earn enough to pay it back. If I understand properly, there were mortgage brokers out there who were saying, no, don't worry. You can pay this back. You can afford to do it.
Yeah, we can get you into this. You know, and they were just getting in, writing the mortgages, getting their fees, and moving on to the next one. The other thing that was happening is that unlike, you know, traditional mortgages, like my mortgage, you know, the bank wanted to really know that you could repay that mortgage because they were holding the loan. What started happening in the 90s and into early 2000 and into today is that the banks were not holding the mortgage. They were taking these mortgages, pooling them and selling them on Wall Street. So they didn't really have any skin in the game anymore.
So let me break this down. I'm just going to say KeyBank. I go to KeyBank and I get a mortgage. If KeyBank holds that mortgage and I pay them every month, they have a vested interest, obviously, in lending me money they know I can pay back. But if KeyBank or some other lender then sells the paper to Acme Bank, mm-hmm. KeyBank really doesn't care if I pay Acme. They've sold the mortgage.
Right.
And that was happening more and more.
And that's what was happening. The brokers were getting their fees. They were getting people into these exotic mortgages where, you know, you were thinking you're getting in at one rate, you know, a 7% fixed rate over 30 years. The next thing you know, you're in a adjustable rate mortgage that's going to go up in 2 months and up again in 3 months and up again in 4 months. And, you know, it was just built on a house of cards. And, the sad part is they were really selling the American dream to very low and moderate income households. When we look at some of the areas where we did some data mapping around Buffalo, for instance, where families were finally able to move out of the inner city and into the kind of ring suburbs close to the city, but finally getting single-family homes and being able to buy those homes, that all their equity is now stripped back out because it's crumbled. When we look at areas on Long Island, even here in the Capital District in Troy, where communities were targeted for these very toxic mortgages, and now the foreclosure wave is just going to come crashing down.
What do your programs offer? What can you do to help work, and how can Telerinky help you in your program? What can we do to work together to solve this problem?
Well, one of the things that New York did last year, again, seeing this trend, we did a major legislative briefing, again, part of the work Empire Justice does to kind of identify an issue, identify a solution, bring it to the legislature, try to get it resolved. We did a full legislative briefing last year. We worked very closely with then Spitzer administration and then with the Patterson administration, with Speaker Silver in the Senate. And the state did a couple of things. One is they put $25 million out into the community over the next 2 years to fund housing counseling services and legal services so that people who are at risk of foreclosure due to subprime mortgages will have some assistance that they can go to and get some hands-on both financial counseling and legal assistance.
So they would sit down with you and you'd go through all of your paperwork, mm-hmm. and they'd be like, this is what you should do, this is how you should be allocating your money, and they would just kind of lend a helping hand.
Exactly. The first step would be to go through the actual mortgage documents. What exactly does your mortgage look like? Who is holding the mortgage right now? Who's the owner of the mortgage, and how do we get them in the room to help solve this problem? And then on the homeowner side, what are things really looking like for you? What is the mortgage you're in right now? If we can make the change to, you know, maybe it was overappraised and we need to get a new appraisal, maybe you're in paying interest only and we need to get you into a more traditional mortgage, or quite frankly, and this is the toughest part, you really can't afford this house, and maybe you need to be thinking about moving on.
Well, Anne, when we were preparing for this, we were talking about, you know, to what extent, you know, there's a responsibility on both sides. The lenders who are lending money, they ought not be lending. The borrowers who are borrowing money, they really can't afford to pay back. And we were talking about these actual documents. Anyone who's ever bought a home knows that documents just fly across the lawyer's desk, and you sign them, and Lord knows no one sits down and reads all the fine print. So explain these ARM, adjustable rate mortgages. If I understand it, people took a mortgage and they were told it's a certain percentage, but then after a period of time, the percentage went up and borrowers obviously weren't aware of this, or if they were, they didn't appreciate the impact.
Exactly. They weren't aware of it. They didn't appreciate the impact. They didn't understand the terms. I mean, you know, even, you know, and I've been steeped in this, you know, you kind of look at these documents, they are daunting. And then, you know, you get into the room to do the final closing, things change, you're signing things that you was not what you understood in the first instance. And then you find that, you know, the rates are adjusting constantly, and you're in over your head.
What that basically means is that month to month, your payments can be going up. Mm-hmm. I've budgeted to pay $1,200 a month, and before I know it, my mortgage is $1,700 a month.
Exactly. I budgeted based on, you know, a 5% interest rate, and within 6 months, I'm at a 10% interest rate. I had no idea that was going to happen, and I can't afford it.
You can't pay it.
So they kind of get you in the door, and then they kind of switch everything up on you.
Well, we certainly have seen that. I wouldn't say everybody does that, but we have certainly seen clients come in that were completely bait and switched.
And you said that it happens a lot, and people kind of feel pressured to sign the papers anyway, even though they know they're probably not going to be able to pay it.
Well, you know, and everybody's at the table saying this is a wonderful thing. You're going to own a home. Isn't this great? You've got a piece of the American dream. I know the terms are a little different from what we discussed the other day, but this is closing. You got to sign it. You know, maybe you're already moving out of your apartment. You've got kids going, and you've got to move.
All right. Well, we have a caller, Richard, from Hunter, with a question about child support. Richard, you're
hey,
on
how
the
you
air.
Doing?
How are you?
Good. Question for you. What do you all do for child support? I have a bunch of child support payments, and I'm trying to fight it. And I was wondering, does this Empire Law Center provide me free representation in child support?
Well, the Empire Justice Center wouldn't do direct legal assistance in that instance. That's where you would either check the Law Help website for an appropriate referral, put in the word child support and your zip code, and the local legal aid society, depending on what their capacity is and the particulars of your case, may want to take a look at it. In terms of child support, we've done a couple of things in terms of both sides of the equation, you know, child support to try to get to the kids so that they can continue to have a living standard that's somewhat decent. On the other hand, we also recognize that there are certain instances with very low-income child support respondents that you simply can't get blood out of a stone, and so we've worked with the legislature to try to set a poverty-level protection for the non-custodial parents.
And certainly, Richard, if you're facing a possible violation of non-payment of child support and jail time and you can't afford an attorney, you would get an attorney assigned to you directly anytime there's a threat of possible jail, that would certainly happen.
Is there anything you can do to help me get divorced from my wives?
Well, more than one wife?
Yeah. One at a time, Richard.
Multiple states.
Nice.
That's legal, right?
I don't think so, but I'm not an attorney.
Well, I would say you can certainly check out the Legal Project if there's a domestic violence issue, the Legal Aid Society, and also the Legal Project runs clinics at various locations every week, and you can certainly go, and your income level is irrelevant. You can get a free 20-minute legal consultation at any of those. Does that help, Richard?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay, good night.
Thanks so much.
All right, before we go to the break, and I just wanted to ask you for a very quick answer. Appraisals. You said some of the appraisals were inflated. What were you referring to?
Well, you know, again, the whole move to just create you increase the appraisal, that increases the fees that the brokers are going to get. And so there was this whole push in some instances to take a look at a house that is maybe, you know, on a market reasonable at 100, and you're saying it's really 150 or 170.
So basically the house is worth more so I can borrow more.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, we're going into the break now. We'd love to hear what you have to say. So give us a call at 1-800-TALK-WGY. And when we're back, we're going to continue this discussion about foreclosures and its effect on neighborhoods.
Fox News Radio, I'm Karen Riegel. An economic stimulus bill likely to pass the Senate with GOP support, but not all Republicans are pleased.
I think having three Republicans potentially supported in the Senate out of 535 members of Congress is hardly a bipartisan effort. I think it's a disappointment. Surely must be for President Obama.
John Cornyn on Fox News Sunday. Democrat Claire McCaskill says this is an emergency.
The building is on fire. And what we typically do in Washington is argue what color of fire truck do we send to the scene. They do not want us arguing about the color of the fire truck. They want something bold. They want something swift.
McCaskill on NBC's Meet the Press. 65,000 gallons of oil sludge spilling in and around the DePlain River in Illinois from a Caterpillar facility. The Coast Guard says it is not a risk to humans, but it is putting animals in danger. Gas prices up over the last 2 weeks to $1.92. Fox News, we report, you decide.
10 WGY Storm Team Forecast.
We have our brief cool down moving through, but we are going to see temperatures return quickly into the 40s by Wednesday and Thursday. Still some gusty winds here as we head through the night. The colder weather settling back to around 20 by daybreak under a partly cloudy sky. Lots of sunshine as we head through your Monday around 34. Light wintry mix possible as the warmer air gets back in Tuesday, 37, 46 Wednesday. I'm Michael Palmer with the A10 WGY Storm Team Forecast.
Pets aren't just animals. They're companions and often members of the family. Unfortunately, pets are not always treated with the care they deserve. Animal cruelty and neglect are sadly a reality. Detecting and reporting abuse are the most important steps in bringing animal cruelty to an end. The Schenectady County Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, SPCA, is a nonprofit volunteer organization that investigates complaints of animal cruelty. Our volunteers donate their time and energy because they believe in our mission to protect animals. We are not funded. We rely exclusively on public donations. You can help with a tax-deductible donation by calling 518-755-9517 or visit our website, SchenectadySPCA.org. Or, if you'd like to join the Schenectady SPCA as a volunteer, again the number 518-755-9517 or on the web, SchenectadySPCA.org.
Are you contemplating a separation or divorce? Are you contesting the custody of your children? You have the right to receive effective legal advice that restores your peace of mind. The experienced attorneys at Tully Rinke can guide, counsel, and help you understand your choices. Call Tully Rinke, 518-218-7100, or visit TullyLegal.com. Tully Rinke PLLC, 441 New Carner Road, Albany, New York. And the Tully Rinke Legal Power Hour, Sunday nights at 7 on WGY. Prior results do not guarantee a similar outcome.
Thanks for coming back to us. If you're a first-time listener, you're listening to the Tully Rinke Legal Power Hour. I'm Barbara King, in for our usual host, Matt Tully. Our show comes to you each Sunday in our new time slot at 7 p.m. when attorneys from the law firm of Tully Rinke give insights into the legal issues that matter most to you. And tonight we're talking about the subprime mortgage meltdown and other legal issues that affect New York families. We're broadcasting around the planet on WGY.com. And joining me tonight is the president and CEO of the Empire Justice Center, Ann Erickson. And Chris is back with us as well. So if you have a question for us tonight, go ahead and give us a call at 1-800-TALK-WGY. Ann, you had been touching a little bit on the trend that you started seeing out in Rochester with some of these mortgage problems. And I want to ask you, because specifically you were telling me that you were tracking statistics on different zip code areas around upstate New York and, in fact, even on Long Island. And I think if any listener can tell, you and I are both from Long Island. What kinds of neighborhoods were hit upstate as well as around the region?
You know, and that's the sad part of it. I mean, it was really this whole subprime, and these are for people that couldn't afford a prime mortgage, so they are in the subprime market.
But, which is basically like a B lender. I mean, you're talking A lender being a major bank, and then they won't give me a mortgage, so I go to someone that is subprime, a step below.
Exactly.
Okay, and
exactly.
As a result, I'm going to pay probably a higher interest rate.
You may pay a higher interest rate, you may pay higher fees and closing costs, and then, but they also then were the very target for these more exotic mortgages. First was the kind of the subprime mortgage. Then we started getting into looking at adjustable rate mortgages and interest only mortgages and no documentation mortgages. These no doc things, because the
well,
folks
let me break
that were writing it.
No doc. You're saying, well, let's explain this to our listeners. Someone could go into this lender and doesn't have to provide tax returns, pay stubs.
The broker in that instance didn't want to know that you couldn't pay. They just wanted to write the mortgage.
They didn't care.
That was their mission in
because
life. Write the mortgage, get the fees.
That's it. Because they get, what, a percentage of the mortgage they sell or a flat fee?
I think it depends. I mean, I think it was probably all over the board. It's not an area I really have a, you know, deep expertise in.
My question is, who do the brokers work for then? Do they work for the bank that's doing the mortgage? Because obviously the bank doesn't want to give out a mortgage that they know is not going to get paid back. So are these brokers just like people out that have their own businesses as brokers, and then they find a bank that'll give them the mortgage, and they kind of work that way, take their commission and run away.
As best I understand it, that's how it was working. And, you know, again, because they were packaging these mortgages then and selling them on Wall Street, you know, as these high-risk, high-return kind of pools, you know, that's part of what's underlying the whole financial meltdown right now, is all of a sudden the banks realized that they had all of this toxic paper that was not going to be paid off.
They're holding all these mortgages that aren't paying.
They're simply not going to get paid.
And we were talking not just about, I still do want you to get back to the areas that were hit, but also ethnic groups. You had some very interesting stats on certain ethnic groups that were hit.
Yeah, we took some data from the Federal Reserve and analyzed it by zip code in the fall of 2007 that we released last March. And it was striking in those areas where we could get the racial overlay. We looked at Suffolk County, for instance. African-American homeowners were three times more likely to live in the most impacted zip codes. You could see where these zip codes were targeted for folks to go in with these very toxic mortgages, unaffordable mortgages, sell the American dream to these communities, and then walk away.
Let me ask you this. So certainly there is a large percentage of people getting hit with this, and it's devastating losing a home. But, you know, the average Joe is saying, you know what, the guy across the street from me is in foreclosure. I'm not, so what do I care? There actually is a significant impact on my neighborhood if people go into foreclosure. Explain for the listeners what that impact is.
Well, I mean, you know, you think about it. First of all, the impact is on the quality of the neighborhood. You know, you get two or three homes on a single block that are in foreclosure. They become abandoned. The rest of the value of the other properties are going to be impacted. Your tax base is going to be impacted. Those are now homeowners that are not paying property taxes.
Okay.
The rest of us pick it up.
That does make a lot of sense, and I don't think the average person thinks about that. We have another caller, Kevin, on his cell phone with a question about mortgage brokers. Kevin, you're on
Hello. The
air. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. What can we do for you?
Well, I'm curious because from what I just understood was that the broker's fees are coming out of the loans of the people taking the loans. Is that correct?
You know, it may vary depending on how each broker sets it up. But, yes, the fees are coming out of the homeowner.
Some buyers will pay the broker directly a certain fee. Other buyers will just borrow more money and roll the broker's cost over into the money they're borrowing from the bank. And at the closing, the bank will cut a check to the mortgage broker. As I understand it, that's pretty common.
Okay. Now, what frustrates me is there not a chance for suing those brokers for inappropriate services or fraudulent services by the buyers?
Well, you know, I don't want to give any legal answer because I'm not entirely clear on it, but I know one of the issues is that the brokers were unregulated. There were no regulations that they were required to follow.
So right, but when it seems to me that there's a civil case there to be made, and I hope that people will consider that.
I think,
I'm sure we're looking into it.
I think what Ann is saying is that had there been some regulations out there, some laws or rules that the brokers had to follow, then it sounds like they probably would have been breaking those rules, and then there would have been a lawsuit. So your point is well taken, Kevin. Without a rule requiring them to do something, it's hard to have them punished for not doing something. But I think there's investigations going on and certainly some new regulations coming down the pike as a result of this.
Absolutely.
Well, I certainly hope so. You folks have a great day.
Thanks for calling. Okay, and so getting back to some of these new laws that have developed around this, just the point Kevin was just making. Mm-hmm. I mean, it'd be nice. We're looking back and we're saying people were doing things they ought not to have been doing, but if there was never a rule out there saying you can't do it, you can't punish them for it. There are, though, some new requirements that have been passed down recently, some new legislation regarding lending as well as some options for people who are in trouble with foreclosures. Briefly, what are those?
Mm-hmm. As I said earlier, one of the things that New York did, unlike any of the other states that we've seen, New York really tried to get out in front of this once they realized what a crisis it was. And the Division of Housing and Community Renewal and the State Banking Department have put funding out, again, for housing counselors to help homeowners through the process and for legal services so that we can provide some legal assistance for those that are at risk of foreclosure as we speak.
Is that the Subprime Foreclosure Prevention Services Program?
Exactly.
A long name, but it's basically everything you're doing.
Yeah, and then there are other pieces of it that now say, and one cornerstone of it is this: there will now be a mandatory settlement conference. So before the home can go to full foreclosure, you can go before a judge. The lender has to be at the other side of the table, the homeowner, the judge. You have a mandatory conference. And at that point, you try to see if there's any way to save the home. Can we change the underlying terms of the mortgage? Can we take a look at the interest rate? Can we make sure that you're not in an interest-only or a quick-adjusting mortgage, but get you back into a more traditional mortgage?
In a sense, the judge is looking at whether or not they should rewrite the mortgage note. Change the terms, correct?
Well, and to see if the broker, to see if the lender is interested in doing that, because I think what's happening now is that the lenders are finally coming around to the point of saying, you know what, that may be our best option. We may not want to get this house into foreclosure because there's nobody standing behind them ready to buy it.
Well, if the lender takes the house back in foreclosure and the house is only worth half of what it was when they sold it, when it was sold. So if I owe $200,000 on my mortgage and the house is only worth $150,000, it doesn't do the lender any good to take the house back.
Exactly. So we're hoping that, this whole thing will catch up now. And now with the mandatory settlement conferences, you'll have someone to say, let's get rational about this. Let's get real about this. Is this mortgage salvageable? Lender, what are you willing to do? Homeowner, what are you able to do? Can we save this home?
This Foreclosure Prevention and Responsible Lending Act of 2008, as I understand it, it also provides added consumer protections, including a requirement that notice has to be sent to the homeowner if they have one of these subprime or non-traditional loans at least 90 days before the lender can even initiate a foreclosure lawsuit. Now, if I get a notice like that, I would think that's when I'm going to go online and look you guys up.
Exactly. And I believe those notices are supposed to include a list of the legal services and the housing counseling agencies in your area that you can reach out to. And the housing counseling agencies, again, they are phenomenal. They will be able to go through the paperwork with you, figure out if this is reasonable, rational, and then working in partnership with your legal services program, they'll be able to get you squared away if it's at all possible.
So they're telling me my rights and where to go to get the questions answered, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
So as to not be completely negative in this whole thing, because it can be a bit dour, we were talking about the fact that there are a certain segment of people that can benefit from the low housing market and the foreclosure problems right now. Who can benefit from that?
Well, you know, if you look at potentially first-time home buyers, a family that is just starting out, and, you know, I hate to say, you know, you get one family benefiting from another family's tragedy, but, you know, there will be properties that come onto the market through the foreclosure process that probably will be more affordable
at good prices
than they had been.
It's what we call a buyer's market right now, isn't it? All right, well, there's time for a short break now, so feel free to give us a call with any of your questions. And to reach us, call 1-800-TALK-WGY or press *WGY on your cell. And if you don't have a chance to get in touch with us tonight, you can reach us at the Tully Rinke offices all week at 218-7100.
Have you taken stock of your assets and long-term financial goals? Are there changes in your family or finances? The experienced attorneys at Tully Rinke PLLC can provide estate planning services, including wills, trusts, tax planning, powers of attorney, probate, and long-term care planning. Call Tully Rinke, 518-218-7100, or visit TullyLegal.com. Tully Rinke PLLC, 441 New Carner Road, Albany, New York. And the Tully Rinke Legal Power Hour, Sunday nights at 7 on WGY.
Usually, a mortgage company's sole focus is property, but first-rate funding is centered on people, not property. Whether you're buying a home or struggling with your current adjustable-rate mortgage, first-rate funding will give you the same amazing personal service. First-rate funding, New Carner Road, Albany, and Broadway, Saratoga Springs. Don't wait. Call today, 452-4700, and please go online, firstratefunding.net, and see how they can help you today. Registered mortgage broker, New York State Banking Department. Mortgage loans arranged with third-party providers.
As a busy working professional, looking good's important to you. No one understands this better than Best Cleaners, the Capital Region's premier garment care provider and dry cleaner. Got a wrinkle in your schedule? Best Cleaners offers pickup and delivery of your dry cleaning right from your home or office, so you don't have to fit one more errand into your busy week. Call 458-BEST, and we'll take care of the rest. With three locations in Del Mar, Loudonville, and on the Latham Circle, Best Cleaners. Always look your best. Call 458-BEST. 458-BEST.
You know this isn't the right job for you, but the problem is you don't know what the right job is. If you're looking for career advice, Careers in Transition LLC can help. Careers in Transition LLC is a career counseling firm that helps you figure out the right job for you. They're not an employment agency, and Dr. Tom Denham is not a headhunter, but they can help you write a better resume, prep for a job interview, and a lot more. Careers in Transition LLC, 11 Computer Drive West in Albany, 366-8451, and online, Careers in Transition LLC.com.
We're back to the Tully Rinke Legal Power Hour. I'm Barbara King, and joining me tonight is Ann Erickson, President and CEO of the Empire Justice Center. Find out more about our show at WGY.com or visit TullyLegal.com to see what else we can do for your legal needs. We still got a little bit more time left to answer your questions, so give us a call at 1-800-TALK-WGY. And we have John from Waterford on the line with a question about subprime mortgages. John, you're on.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good.
Can you hear me?
Okay. We can.
Okay, I have one of those. I think I have one of those subprime mortgages. Back in 2003, I refinanced. And what they did is they sold me the second mortgage to like clean up credit card debt,
right?
And it was it's like a $20,000 mortgage, but it's in the second position,
right?
Okay, so what they did is there was an arm attached to it, and it works off the prime rate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that something what you guys have been talking about? Is that, am I describing something that is kind of was told to me under a fraudulent manner? You know what I mean? I didn't know that it adjusts like that.
What do you think, Ann?
Well, I mean, we certainly can't say without actually looking at individual papers. And what we're talking about here tonight is really the mortgage on the home. But
well, it is on the home. It's
like a home equity loan.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But if you have an adjustable rate that's attached to the prime rate, I really couldn't say. You'd have to bring it into either a counselor or to a legal services program to really take a look at the papers.
It's worth having it looked at, John, and your question really points out everything Ann is saying tonight, and that is people, even very savvy folks that already have homes and mortgages,
yep,
may not have really known what they were getting into when they took these. Well, thanks for calling, John.
Okay, who should I talk to there? Who could I get a hold of?
Well, again, I would go to the lawhelp.org website, put in home loans or mortgages or subprime, and then put in your zip code, and it will give you the list of folks available in your area.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, yeah, thanks. Good night. And we also have a call-in, Joe from Saratoga, who is a contractor. Joe, you're on the air. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I really appreciate this call tonight.
Go ahead.
I've got a question on a contractor, but I wish I can talk to you more about short sales in this market, too, because I'm really interested in that also. But the question I have is, I hired a contractor to remodel a wall. It was an outside wall. He was going to put in a door and a window on top of that. And it was supposed to be a 3-day job, and, well, 2.5 months later, we can't find the guy.
And your question, I'm going to assume this isn't related to mortgages in any way.
No, but I asked and they said you can take the call.
Oh, that's okay. No, it's not a problem. I just want to make sure we're clear about your question.
It pertains to a house.
Right. I got you. Well, I suppose you could check out that lawhelp.org website to see if there's any services that are in the area that would help you with questions like that. I would think you should go see an attorney. And if you want to get a free opinion without having to pay someone for one, the Legal Project, which is out of Albany, you can look them up in the phone book, runs legal clinics, as I said at the beginning of the show, at least once a week out of all different neighborhoods in the area where you can get a free 15-20-minute consultation with a lawyer, and you don't have to be low income, high income, and they'll try and answer your questions.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I appreciate that.
Sure, yeah, thanks for calling.
I would also check the Consumer Protection Board.
Good point.
And the Attorney General's office also has a fraud section on its website. They may have some good tips and techniques on what to look for.
Okay. And getting back to my first question there about short sales, do you find it helping or hurting?
You're talking about people who sell the properties back to the bank for less, for more than what they owe or less than what they owe?
Yeah, it's usually you short pay the mortgage.
Right. What we sometimes call a deed in lieu of foreclosure. You give the deed or the property back and they'll forego a foreclosure.
This is actually somebody else buying the mortgage from the bank at a discounted rate and then reselling it or owning it.
It's really up to the lender. I have heard of people doing that more and more, as well as the deed in lieu of foreclosure, where you basically just give the property back and the mortgage is forgiven. But it's up to the specific lender.
Do you find it helping or hurting the situation, Annie?
Oh, I think it goes a little bit deeper than my knowledge. What about you, Ann?
Yeah, mine as well, and I think it's all very individualized. The one thing I know that we had seen a last couple years ago was this whole deed theft, where groups would come in or a company would come in, or quasi-company, and say, we'll help you, we'll, you know, just turn the deed over to us, you keep paying us, we'll pay the mortgage, and lo and behold, you had sold the house, you had signed your house over to these people, and you had lost any equity you had, you basically lost your home. New York has passed legislation against that, so
right. That
should not be
right. That's more like scamming somebody.
Yeah. Oh,
exactly.
It's very scary.
Scamming while they're down.
Yeah. Well, thanks for calling, Joe. You have a good night.
I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you.
You know, I think a lot of these callers are calling in and asking about the appraisal thing. I didn't really get a chance to ask you a question about taking money out when your house gets appraised at a higher value. Are people taking money out when they can't even afford to pay their first mortgage, but they got an appraisal, so now their house is worth another $100,000, so they can take a home equity loan, and they got $100,000 to, let's say, put a pool table in the basement and redo everything, put a bar in. Did you find that was happening a lot?
Certainly not with our clients, because, again, what we're talking about are very low and moderate income households, and primarily trying to purchase the first home or to hold on to the home. So certainly we're not seeing that with our clients.
I think your population wasn't necessarily doing that, but what Chris is talking about is prevalent, and certainly I see it in some of my matrimonial work where couples are divorcing. The appraisal comes in, the market's gone up, the house is now worth $350,000, we only owe $250,000. Guess what? That's $100,000 there. Mm-hmm. And I've seen people go in, take the money out, basically, you know, suck the property dry, which would be great if the market stayed up. And right. It would be great if they kept their jobs. But when the market comes down or someone loses a job, now you've got a population that's different from what you're servicing that has pretty much the same problem, mm-hmm. and that is foreclosure.
Right. And for our clients, what we were seeing is the appraisal getting the overappraisal. Let's say the home is worth, you know, $80,000 or $90,000, and they're appraising it high so that you're ending up with
you're
a higher
the mortgage.
Talking
the initial appraisal, when they're first trying to buy the home.
Mm-hmm. And then you end up then with a higher mortgage.
Well, Ann, with the time we have left, which I'm sorry to say is not going to be enough time because this is a big topic, but can you give us a sort of Reader's Digest rundown on the bailout we're all talking about and looking at? It's the big news. But also going back to the bailout, we had a big bailout this fall. And I don't think a lot of people understand what happened with that money. Has it been sent out? Was it spent? Is there more waiting? Can you give us a rundown on that?
You know, I can try. It is a moving target, and it's extremely complicated. What they did in the fall was they did a program called TARP, the Troubled Asset Recovery Program. And that was really, it was about $700 billion, $750 billion, and it was really aimed at trying to help the banks out of what is this subprime mess.
The banks that had bought these bundled mortgages you referred to.
Bundled mortgages, toxic mortgages, bad paper, finding out that, in fact, there were really no assets behind what they thought were their assets, and so they have these gaping holes. So TARP was really intended to shore up the financial industry. About $300-$350 billion of that has gone out the door already, went out under the Bush administration, no strings attached, take the money, you know, shore up your finances.
But now the lenders aren't lending the money.
Exactly. And it was supposed to prime the pump. It was supposed to get lending going again. Lending is not going again.
So now there's about $350 left.
They're talking about the second half, but now they're talking about putting strings on it. And you'll heard over the weekend the President Obama saying he wants caps on executive pay and, you know, other kinds of strings to make sure that the funds are used appropriately and used to get the markets moving again. The other thing that Congress is now dealing with is the stimulus package. And this is really about stimulating the economy.
So this is, just to kind of, so this, we already have about $750 in the first, the TARP program, about half of which has
been
lent.
And that's only going to the financial sector.
And now we're looking at another about $800 billion for a stimulus package.
Exactly.
So if my math is about right, we're talking,
$1.5
trillion? I don't know. You're the
that's
math
a lot
guy,
of zeros.
Chris.
Yes.
Okay, so go ahead on the stimulus.
But the stimulus package is really important because what the stimulus package will do, if they can keep it focused, is put money into the economy where it is going to have the most stimulative effect.
Like where?
Things like unemployment benefits, so people can keep buying goods and services.
You mean extending the benefits?
Extending the benefits, mm-hmm. Keep the roof over your head. Food stamps. Every dollar in food stamps that comes into the community is spent in the community. It's spent on food. It's spent in the groceries. It's keeping the grocery stores moving. Pure federal funding. Child care funding. Keep the family able to keep their job. Keep the daycare provider with its small business going. These kinds of stimulative effects, keeping people's Medicare going, keeping health benefits intact so that the health industry has funds flowing to it. If I walk into the doctor's office without insurance, that's not going to help the doctor's office. If I walk in with coverage attached to me, the doctor's going to get paid. You keep the money moving into the economy where it's needed. They're talking about infrastructure building, roads, bridges, construction worker, construction jobs, rebuilding schools. And now, and the thing I was very troubled by yesterday, the U.S. Senate had a very rare Saturday session, and the Republicans are trying to strip out about $40 billion that would go to the states. And the states are in dire need. If they don't get that, we're talking about laying off teachers, school.
Some pretty tragic results.
Exactly.
Well, unfortunately, that's it for us this Sunday. There's a lot more we could have gone into, but I'd like to give a special thanks to Ann for joining me on the show tonight. And if you didn't have a chance to reach us, we can be found all week at the Tully Rinke offices at 218-7100.